Good evening, Untangling audience. Hope everybody is having a fun Labor Day weekend. And we're going to be rolling out a new segment on this show. And that segment is going to be called What's Trending in America and Around the World. So that's how I plan to end each show moving forward. And again, there'll be episodes where you have one-offs where the conversation or just, you know, the podcast just takes a life of its own. It is what it is. I think sometimes when you try to stick to a schedule and things happen and you kind of have to deviate from that schedule, you don't want to be pigeonholed. So we will do a trending search for September 3rd, 2022 to end all our shows, hopefully moving forward. So for me, what's new? The in-laws are in town. My daughter is extremely happy because they shower her with gifts. And one of the things I love about my in-laws is all the gifts are so thought out and so thoughtful. So today's main gift was actually roller skates. And my daughter already knows how to ride a bike. I taught her how to ride a bike when she was 5 years old. And people just couldn't believe it that she's able to ride a two-wheeler. And I want to say it's literally when she just turned 5 years old. I just said, hey, we're going to take this week to learn how to ride a bike. The timing's right. And it just worked out. And she's been riding a bike ever since. She actually has a really, really cool bike. The first one she had was a tricycle. So we had to take the wheels off so she could learn how to ride a two-wheeler. That was around 4.5, 5. And then I said, you know what? We got to get you a serious bike. So we got this really cool bike. It has the gears. It has a handle where the brakes are. So it's top notch. It's a really, really cool bike. And I talked about it in a previous episode. But with the in-laws in town, the gifts are always thoughtful. And the gift that my daughter received today was roller skates. And I was a little nervous because we're getting wood floors. So we said she's not going to be using this in the house. However, we were able to go outside. My daughter put on these roller skates and absolutely love them. One of the things I forgot is how hard it is to roller skate. And I'm watching my daughter roller skate and I said, this is more dangerous than riding a bike. Like, she's trying to keep her balance. She's never put these on, but she had so much fun and she just kept saying, I want to roller skate. I want to roller skate. And with the in-laws, they're actually staying at a hotel, the DoubleTree Inn. And part of the reason is, again, we're getting our kitchen remodeled. So it just works out. They spend the days here hanging out with us. We watched some college football today. Did a little bit of roller skating. So they spend, I would say, probably 90% of the time here at the house. But because of the current situation we're in, minus a bathroom, the kitchen being remodeled, they're staying at the DoubleTree Inn. I say the DoubleTree Inn because we actually had to go over there last night. And for the Untangling audience, if you don't know this fact, you're going to learn it today. And that fact simply is the DoubleTree Inn Hotel has the best cookies in America. So I walk into the DoubleTree Inn with the wife and the daughter. And I go to the front desk and I ask, I'm like, hey, could I have one of the DoubleTree Inn cookies? And they take so much pride in it. They bring out this warm cookie. And it is, and I haven't been to the DoubleTree Inn in a very long time. It is even better today than I remembered it roughly 5, 10, 15 years ago. So the in-law staying at the DoubleTree Inn, one of the main reasons is it has a pool. So during the day, my daughter will join them to go swimming, hang out with the grandparents, have fun. So everything just kind of works out. It frees up my wife and I to get some work done, hang out. My wife has a very busy, very, very busy schedule with school being back in session. So it just works out for everybody. The weather has been really, really nice here. So overall, Labor Day weekend is off to a great start. Again, the daughter is learning how to roller skate. And the roller skates she got, they're so futuristic. I'm like, I've never seen anything like these. These are really cool. And my daughter's really into tie-dye, especially, you know, like the peace sign, all the different colors. So her new roller skates actually is kind of a tie-dye feel to it. So she's ecstatic. So with that, what else has been going on? Again, college football is back in session. So when college football kicks off, it just kind of reminds me of the fall is here. But with that, I don't know how many people listening to today's episode has been experiencing allergy symptoms like you've never experienced before. For me, my allergies have been unbearable. And I'm sitting there thinking, like, what is going on? And I remember usually around this time every year, I always say it's the allergies' last stand, where they simply give you everything they have. My eyes have been so itchy. My nose is stuffy. My eardrum, I keep pulling on my ear just to get some relief from just being uncomfortable, and I just cannot stop sneezing and itching my eyes. And part of it, I think, is after 2 years of wearing a mask and kind of, you know, going away from that a little bit, it's you have to start to build your immune system over. Because I literally asked myself, are my allergies getting worse? Or is this due to the fact that the last 2 years, 3 years, I basically wore a mask for 90% of the time? So time will tell. The good news is it did start to rain here in central Illinois a couple hours ago. And for all the allergy sufferers, rain is just like the greatest sound, because it is just going to knock down all that pollen, the dust. And with my allergies, I'm sitting there, I'm like, is it tied to the kitchen because of the work, the dust? Because I did get tested to see what I'm allergic to, and my worst two are pollen and dust mites and dust. So anything dust related, it is brutal for me when it comes to allergies. And with the work of the kitchen, your head starts to go places like, oh, I'm not feeling great because of. And so I just kept having it. It's the house. And then, you know what? Today, woke up. They weren't as bad. Nothing really changed. Still in the same house. Felt good. So I'm like, okay, maybe it's not the house and there's something bigger going on. But allergies have been brutal. So I'm actually taking Zizol. And one of the reasons I take Zizol, and for those of you listening who don't know what Zizol is, you always see the commercial. It's that owl selling allergy medication. So if you see an owl, you know, he always turns the light on and off and he says, Zizol. That's the allergy medication I take. And the reason why I take Zizol is I had a close friend in the pharmaceutical field where their specialty was actually allergy medication. And one of the things about pharmaceutical sales is you have all this data, all these research, these studies, and so they just compare them to all the other allergy medication. She told me, she's just like, Zizol blows them all out of the water. I trust her, so I took her word for it, and I've been taking Zizol ever since. I'm also taking Singular for my allergies as well. I haven't had to take it in the last 2 years, but this year, spoke with my physician, and she just said, yeah, we'll write you a order of Singular, and if you're taking Zizol, that's okay as well. So those have been able to help a little, but it has been a brutal last 2 weeks for me when it comes to allergies. So with that, on today's Untangling episode, figured we would talk about what comes next, okay? And what I mean by what comes next is people who know what comes next are always wealthy. And here's a question for the Untangling audience. So with the Untangling audience, would you prefer to have $1.2 million in the bank when it's all said and done? Or would you prefer to live a purposeful life, a satisfying life, a life where you wake up every morning more happy than anybody else on this planet, but when it's all said and done, you walk away from it with $0, which means that you budgeted through life so perfectly that when the day comes, you leave with $0. So $1.1 million or $1.2 million, when it's all said and done, based off all your hard work, going through the grind, having to deal with politics, you know, nonsense, making money, losing money, to get to the point of 1.1 to 1.2 million, when they put you in that ground, that's your worth, or a purposeful life where you balance your money so great, you walk out of here with $0. So just a question to think of. I know you probably think the answer is a lot easier than you would probably be able to guess. But again, with that question, it's not as easy of a question as you might think. So the reason why I bring that up is because I was listening to a podcast today, and the podcast is called The Hack. And with The Hack, and I'll try to put the link in my bio so you could listen to this episode, they had a gentleman on there, and this gentleman is extremely well-versed in real estate, finance, 35-year-old in banking during the mortgage collapse. I want to say he was a director at a great company. And he really understands finance, and just listening to him, you could just tell when somebody knows what they're talking about. And one of the things he said that really stood out to me is with education, okay? And the host of the show, it's called The Hack, asked the guest, is a education worth it? Should I continue to contribute to my 529? So for those of you listening who don't know what a 529 is, it's simply a college plan for your kids. So that way you put money away today, 18 years from now, if they need help paying for college, that's taken care of, because with the investments, it's tied to the market. However, it's a really safe portfolio. So they're not in speculative stocks. They're not in global stocks. They're not in small caps. They are in really safe stocks. And it's just a great way to think of the future and saving money. And this gentleman's answer was very fascinating. And he said, you know what? And he lives in San Francisco, so you got to understand where he is located as well. And he said, I just don't understand people who send their kids to a private college. And he said, I did the math. And the math says to send your kid to a private, not college, to send your kid to a private school throughout their life is going to cost on average $1.1 million by the time they turn 18 years old. So that's $1.1 million to send your kid to a private school until they reach 18 years old. Now, he said the flip side of that is you could send your kid to a public school. And if you send them to a public school, he said, the question I want you to ask your kid is this. Would you prefer that I or your mother and I or your father and I send you to a private school where it's going to cost us, when it's all said and done, $1.1 million? However, you'll be on your way to college, you'll have, you know, a successful career based on what's expected. Or we can send you to a public school, and when you turn 18 years old, we hand you a check, and you don't want to hand them a check because, you know, the host of the podcast brought this up to the guest speaking, and the guest said, no, you want to basically design it so they're not blowing it at 18 years old. And we hand you over $1.1 million to start your life off. And he says, just listen to what they say and listen to what they say very, very carefully. And that question and just looking at it from that perspective really stood out to me. And I get it. You want your kid to have an advantage. But he also went on to say, listen, some people are just born smarter than other people. Some people are taller than other people. Some people are stronger than other people. So with that, you have to take it into consideration that, you know, sending your kid to a private school isn't the end all be all. And I was just simply thinking about that. And personally, I didn't need that question phrased that way because, you know, this was a conversation my wife and I had. And my wife, she is a professor of early child education and development. So this is her realm in regards to schooling, just research, what she's seen in public schools. And we decided we would be sending our daughter off to a public school. And part of that is simply, in America, public schools are great. They get a bad reputation because obviously, you know, the news, you have agendas, you have racism in this country. So public schools, a lot of times, they're kind of frowned upon, like, oh, you know, it's the people without money who do that. When in actuality, that's actually not the case. I'm a product of a public school. And I think my parents played it perfectly because early on, we did go to a private school. The rest of my life was simply public. And I ended up going to college. I ended up getting a master's degree. I have a great career. So I look at public schools and clearly, based on my experience, I don't know what people are talking about. On the flip side of that, I know a lot of people who went to private schools their whole life. And then when it was time to go to college, they went to a private college. For example, let's just say, what's a private college? The Notre Dames of the world, the Holy Crosses of the world. And with that, going to those private schools, they're in a good predicament, but it's not bounds and light years ahead. Okay, so there's really no evidence that shows you go to private school, you end up making $900,000 more than your counterpart who went to a public school, got a great college education. There's no research of that, to my knowledge. So I am public school all the way. And to answer that question that was asked on the hack, for me, it's handing my daughter a check. Okay, clearly it wouldn't be a check for 1.1, 1.2. It would be, hey, you will receive $1,000 per week for how many years that math ends up being. So just something to think about when you think about the private school and what comes with it. And that $1.1 million, I mean, that doesn't include if they decided after the fact to go to college and get a advanced degree on top of that. I mean, if you're going to fund it all the way to an advanced degree, you're probably looking at more like $1.4 to $1.6 million that you could be handing out over at 18 years old. Just a very, very interesting question. The other thing too is another podcast I've been listening to is Wondery, and I won't get too far into it. If you're into business, you definitely want to listen to every Wondery podcast. They're just so well-crafted, and the way they communicate it, the audio, you could literally, it's like you're watching a movie. That's how well done it is. This week, it's on J.D. Rockefeller, and I'll leave it at this. Rockefeller was just a very, very, very bad human being. Rockefeller was simply a real billionaire, okay? And his claim to fame is he is the first billionaire in American history. So that's a title nobody could ever take away from him because, you know, with billionaires, they're always competing for something. And when I say this, he was a bad person. And what's so sad is, and with Wondery, they do their facts. They'll say, hey, here's the book we got it from. Here's the newspaper it's written in. Here are people who are actually there, their accounts of the event. So Wondery is big, big, big production stuff we're talking about here. And one of the things that really stood out to me about Rockefeller, and I've always heard like he's this great guy, he was an oil tycoon, all this stuff. And you know how some education in the United States, it was simply Christopher Columbus discovered America. And then, you know, like I said before, people started poking holes in that theory and none of it added up. I've really never heard anything bad about Rockefeller till I listened to this Wondery podcast. And one of the things Rockefeller would do is he would plant. So let me take a step back. Rockefeller owned Standard Oil. Okay. There's a long story behind how he got there. The easiest way to explain it is he screwed one of his partners over like you wouldn't believe, okay? So he gets rid of a partner, he takes over Standard Oil, and with Standard Oil, in order to grow, Rockefeller believes in two things. He believes in mergers or destroying his competition. That's it. That's how he thinks. That's how he operates. So he wants to go global. And part of going global at that time was getting a piece of the Japan oil market. The piece of the Japan oil market was held by a company, and it's slipping my mind. They're based out of London, and they own, what's it called? The shipping trade, okay? Back then. So Rockefeller goes to this company and says, listen, the way I do business is we either merge or I destroy you. And this company was so well run that it would actually have hit their pocketbooks if they decided to merge. So they said, hey, Things are good. We just want to be left alone. We have our contract with Japan. That company thought that was the end of it. So what Rockefeller would do is he would plant stories in the newspapers. And one of the things he always used to say when planting these stories in the newspaper is, hey, make sure you tell them Standard Oil had nothing to do with this article. And so the company out of London that owned, okay, the shipping freights, owned the oil supply, what Rockefeller did was he posted an article, and the article said, do you understand the owners of this shipping freight who are bringing oil from Britain into Japan are Jews? Do you understand that with Jews, all they care about is money and taking over the world and not caring about who they destroy? And now in England, people are reading this story and this company's bottom line starts taking a hit. Like, oh my goodness, they're Jewish. And again, this is Rockefeller's time. And to be honest with you, not much has changed in regards to racism. But just learning that Rockefeller would use racism to try to destroy a competitor by printing something in the papers and then simply saying, oh, no, that's not me. And what's fascinating is with the company he tried to destroy, they were so tough, they were so smart, they were able to kind of fight back. But over the years, that story, just a lot of wear and tear into their business, Rockefeller ended up getting his way. So just listening to it, I'm just like, you know what? This is exactly what a lot of businesses are today. Planting stories, destroying competition. Now you have, so you got to figure, Rockefeller didn't have social media, no Facebook, no Twitter, no Instagram. So he destroyed people through the newspapers. And today you'll see stories about certain companies. And I kind of look at that like, people will do anything to win. And I'm personally not wired that way because of the, you know, human element of it for me. But yeah, people making Rockefeller into a hero. I mean, this guy was grade A scumbag. A lot of the same characteristics as Donald Trump. However, he really did have $1 billion. So that's what would separate him and a Donald Trump. But same sociopathic, narcissist, just lack of empathy to get ahead. And then when you look at a country like America on why we're wired the way we are, it's because it's simply, look at who our heroes were. And when I was going through school, what I heard about Rockefeller was simply he owned oil, he understood business, he knew how to grow. And they left out so many details. Oh, by the way, this guy was a grade A racist that would destroy anybody, destroy any family, make up stories just to gain power. So just a absolute scumbag. And I'm going to be honest with you, I listened to 3 episodes of Rockefeller. The first one started off really good in regards to his childhood, his parents, how he was brought up. Very religious. And then the other 2 episodes, when you really start to find out who this guy is, I'm like, listen, I don't want to listen to episode 4, because one thing I've done is I'm just done giving scumbags, you know, additional airtime. So for all of you who looked up to Rockefeller, who said Rockefeller is a great person, how successful, he is a grade A scumbag. And if that's who you choose to model your life after, if that's who you decide, hey, you know what, I'm going to teach my kid about Rockefeller, more power to you. But man, what a scumbag. And one of the things that is certain in this lifetime, and also as long as the earth continues to spin, is that the truth will always come out. And I've said it in a previous podcast. What happened in history is simple. The reason why people seek power is because the people with power write the laws. They also write the history. So if you control power, you could write history. So what did Rockefeller want his image to be? Positive. Oil tycoon who helped America to become who we are today. That was the pitch. But what happens is as time progresses, the truth always comes out. So that's my 2 cents in regards to Rockefeller. So one of the questions I always ask myself, and since we're talking about wealth, is what separates a millionaire and a billionaire? And with a millionaire, it's simple, right? With a millionaire, you can make $1 million in stocks. You can make $1 million in real estate. You can make a million working 9 to 5. People have done that, believe it or not. You can make $1 million starting a business. So there's a lot of ways to make $1 million. However, there's only a handful of ways you can make $1 billion. And one of the ways to make $1 billion is by controlling information. So if you have the power to control information, that's how most billionaires are made. Because if becoming a millionaire, okay, and then you become a billionaire, were that easy? Because if you can make $1 million investing, well, chances are you're going to start making more money and you can invest a lot more to make a lot more money. But becoming a billionaire is very, very difficult because it takes controlling information and controlling a message. It's Labor Day, so you probably hear sirens in the background. So who knows what's going on. If you can't hear it, just letting you know, they're all over the place right now. So controlling information. Billionaires today, Jay-Z, what does he do? Controls information or the messaging that he wants you to receive. Billionaire today, Kanye West, what does he do? Controls messaging, controls information. How does he do that? He does it because he is an extremely gifted artist that's able to reach you anywhere in the world. Elon Musk. Elon Musk is a billionaire. There's a lot of CEOs who've had great car companies, okay, who've had success. And you want to talk about another scumbag. You could add Elon Musk to that list as well. Elon Musk control information. Elon Musk, no advertising for Tesla. However, was savvy enough to control the information of who to target, okay, to create champions, to go and send that message out for him. Like, it's almost like having disciples. And today, Tesla is a multi-billion dollar, it was almost a $1 trillion company. So billionaires are able to control messaging and they're able to control information. That's what's, in my mind, separates a millionaire from a billionaire. So I say that because one of the questions I always ask myself is, what's next? And with Facebook, now Meta, for Mark Zuckerberg, what's next is VR, virtual reality, augmented reality. And so he feels like, okay, and again, another billionaire, what did he do? Controls information. Forget controlling information. Mark Zuckerberg can control your feed of what you should be thinking on a daily basis, as if that's not scary enough. But with Mark Zuckerberg, for him, it's virtual, augmented. That's what's next for Mark Zuckerberg. And he's taking a huge gamble going into this field, okay, as a trailblazer, gambling and leveraging the future of Facebook on this belief that he has. And we're all sitting around saying, is it going to work? And time will tell. My honest opinion is this. It is going to work. And the reason why it's going to work is, with all his faults, Mark Zuckerberg is a very, very, very brilliant human being. You could say you don't like him. You could say he's evil. Again, it seems like these billionaires have that characteristic. Rockefeller, Elon Musk, okay? We could kind of throw Kanye into that mix, where these just aren't the best human beings. I don't know if becoming a billionaire does that to you. Who knows? That's another argument for another day. But Mark Zuckerberg's gambling his future on augmented reality. And if he could crack that code, forget the what Facebook's worth today, okay? If he could crack that code, I think Facebook's trading at $160 today. He cracks that code, Meta, Facebook, whatever it's called. That stock, I mean, people are going to say, how did you not buy that stock at $160 10 years ago? That thing is trading at, and I do think he will be able to crack that code. And Zuckerberg reminds me a little bit of a Steve Jobs. Where Steve Jobs, a lot of people forget, he had an opening act. And that opening act was Apple. Apple kicked him out. They ousted him. He created Next. He helped create Pixar. Apple was about to go bankrupt. They brought him back. So he got his second act, okay? So two acts. Pre-Apple, getting kicked out of Apple. Second act, he comes back to save Apple. Now, Mark Zuckerberg, Facebook. And what separates a Steve Jobs from Mark Zuckerberg is Mark Zuckerberg hasn't been ousted from Facebook, even though people have tried. And I think it would have literally been the best thing that could have happened to him because it would have truly humbled him. So that's where I'm a little torn on his second act. First Act Facebook. Facebook loses all credibility to a point where the brand is so tarnished, he had to change the company name. Like, nothing positive is associated with Facebook today. Nothing. You hear Facebook, people cringe because unethical, monitoring people, doing things we can't even imagine or has yet to be released. So what's Mark's second act? Mark's second act is virtual reality, augmented reality, and a list of other names of what you could call it. And if he cracks that code, he will literally help shape the future. Like I said before, he is a trailblazer. And when I went to Iowa to visit the in-laws, they actually had the Meta headset. And I put this thing on and it is surreal. And you have to be careful because you literally think you're in this world and you're moving and you could like hit a wall if you're not careful. And it's really, really cool because you see the potential. And part of the potential is this. What about if you're in medical school and you put one of these on and you're able to see a patient and you're able to diagnose that patient? Do you understand what that would do for the world of healthcare? So now Meta is tied into healthcare. How about education, where you don't have to drive to a lecture hall? You put on your augmented reality glasses and you're in a lecture hall with everybody else. You could look to your right, you could look to your left, and you see your classmates. You're able to talk to your classmates. One person's in Alaska, the other person's in Boston, Massachusetts, in the same lecture hall. I mean, this is big, big stuff, and it's going to cost a lot of money to implement, to strategize, and to also execute. But you get this right. I mean, the windfall, the money, it's endless. So that's Mark Zuckerberg. Back to my question of what happens next. And for me, I personally think, and these things come in phases. So it's not what happens next and that's the end all be all. We all move on because it's always changing. For me, what happens next, based on my experience, is I think you're going to start seeing a lot more of health and wealth is going to become one. Right now, with wealth, financial planning, let's just say you're in the mortgage space, let's just say you're in the real estate space, that's finance, okay? I have a finance background working at Bank of America, my days in selling mortgages, okay, reverse mortgages, that's finance. Health is the overall well-being of a human being. However, health and wealth are going to combine because they're intertwined. So if I'm shopping for a health insurance plan, that's going to impact my wealth based on how I select that plan, based on how I decide to use that plan. So you're going to need a health and wealth specialist, okay? So I'm turning 65. I need Medicare. I don't know the first place of where to start with Medicare. And at the same time, I'm getting ready to cash out my 401k. What happens now? I mean, do we really think those should be two separate conversations? No, that's where health meets wealth, okay? So with Medicare, based on the plan that you're going to sign up for, and you could go original Medicare, you could go Medicare Sup, you could go Medicare Advantage. How will that eventually impact your wealth? So health and wealth. The other one is hospice care, right? End of life planning. That ties into your wealth. How much does it cost a month? With everything paid, how long can my money afford me to stay in the care of hospice? Do you think a financial advisor should say, hey, you know, Charles, your portfolio says you have $700,000. Okay, that's good to know. Now I'm working with a health insurer in regards to hospice, and I have to communicate the wealth aspect of that. I mean, I don't know anything about that. That's just what my financial advisor told me, that I have, you know, $700,000 in my portfolio for end of health care. And so I think an industry that is in its infancy stage and is going to continue to grow, and it's going to grow gangbuster within the next 5 to 10 years, it's going to be a wealth and health coach. Luckily for me, that's my background. So in regards to my job prospects, and these jobs don't exist yet, the opportunities might be endless, but I definitely see that coming down the pike. And the reason why is money is too intertwined today with your overall health care. You've all seen on TV with the Reduction Inflation Act that President Biden passed, cost of insulin, having that capped out on the commercials, no, having that capped out on the Medicare side, okay? However, it's not capped out on the commercial side. And my personal belief in regards to why that happened is because on the Medicare side, you're going to get voters. They're going to go out. They're going to call their representative. Like, my Medicare was capped. My Medicare plan had my insulin capped at $35. And now you're going to change it. And their representative will hear hell until that changes. However, you also have a strong lobby group on the pharmaceutical side. So what I think happened is everybody went to the table. They had to negotiate. And that negotiate ended with, we will cap insulin at $35 for Medicare. So that's anyone who's 65 or older. And on the commercial side, which is individuals, families, employer groups, we're not going to cap that because guess what? That is big pharma. If you look at Eli Lilly, who's one of the number one makers of insulin, I want to say 3 years ago, I looked at Eli Lilly's stock. I've always followed them closely from being in the pharmaceutical realm. And the first time I saw their stock was at $30. I want to say today, each share of Eli Lilly is trading at $302. And Eli Lilly won a big fight because they get to keep their commercial business and charge the consumer whatever they see fits, okay? Because if you need insulin, you need insulin. There's no going around that. So the Inflation Reduction Act that President Biden passed, Medicare recipients, their insulin's capped at $35. For anybody who is not Medicare eligible, it is not capped. The other thing with where health is going to meet wealth or wealth meets health, those two words are interchangeable, is when it comes to what's called an HSA plan, a health savings account. With health savings account, there's great tax implications with it. So what an employer will do is simply, hey, you're an employee, we're going to put $5,000 into this account. You use the $5,000, great. You don't, it is what it is. What a health savings account does for employers is it allows them to budget, okay? If you have a business and you have five employees and you say, we're gonna match $5,000 into our employees' HSA account. So five times five, that's 25,000. 5,000 times five, 25,000. That small company is able to budget what their healthcare cost is going to be for the year, and then they could move on with business. You have other employer groups, what they'll do is they'll simply say, you know what, for insurance, we'll pay a portion of the premium. And premiums change. They could go up, they could go down, depending on the year, they could stay the same. So knowing what you're going to pay as a business, it's what we call guidance. And with HSAs, they're gaining a lot of attention because they're so much easier for an employer to manage. So are you telling me I'm going to go to my employer to talk about an HSA plan because that's healthcare related, and then I got to go to my accountant to talk about what does this mean to me for tax purposes? I mean, what does my accountant know about healthcare? And a lot of times that answer is nothing, okay? And so I'll leave you with, in my personal opinion, what I think is next is health meets wealth, where the two are intertwined, and the people who have a skill set and understand both, they're really going to separate themselves from all their competitors. With that, hope you enjoyed the show. Have a great Labor Day weekend and see you next week. And that's right, trending topics. So I have a pretty cool software here, and it just simply tells me what's trending. If it's either United States, you could do the world. It's a really, really cool software. So number one, and this is based on, you know, every website, the impressions people leave once they visit. That includes Twitter, Facebook, Google, you name it. And right now, the number one impression in America is Ohio State versus Notre Dame. Clearly, the two are playing today. The spread was minus 17. I couldn't believe it. I actually took Notre Dame because I feel like they actually got better at head coaching than they were. People are fooled by Brian Kelly. I followed him at Cincinnati. I fought him at Notre Dame. Now he's on to LSU. He's one of those coaches where he's going to get you his 10 wins, nothing more, nothing less. And people are like, wow, he did a great job at Notre Dame. Cincinnati became a better university after he left. Cincinnati, I want to say, was in the BCS playoffs last year when Notre Dame could not make it. And Notre Dame has a lot more access to talent than Cincinnati. So Brian Kelly, he's a smart guy. When everybody's onto him, he just takes it short on the road. So I personally felt like with Notre Dame, they have a good team. They now have a great head coach. And so I saw 17 points. I jumped at it, took Notre Dame. So that's the number one trending topic in the United States right now. Number two, Georgia football. Georgia played the University of Oregon today. So that's number two. Number three is the UFC. So a lot of sport making the top trend list today. So I'll leave it with that, the top three. And let's see who is at the bottom of that list. So at the bottom, I usually like to do top and then see who is at the bottom. Right now is Jack Harlow. And I've never heard of Jack Harlow. I still don't know what he does. Apparently, I think he's like a singer, a rapper or something. But it looks like Jack Harlow went on to the game day set and had a concert. And it was complete silence. Nobody clapped. I think a lot of people did not know who he was. So right now, he is on the bottom of that list at 100,000 impressions. And one thing I always have to give to Hollywood is if there's somebody they want to make famous, they will just shove that person down your throat until you don't stop seeing their name. Even though you could look at this person, you could listen to one of their songs or whatever it is they do, and no, they have zero talent. So one above that is Barcelona. So it looks like soccer is at trending at number 19. But just, I think, a fun way to end the show. And if I ever come back to these episodes, it's always good to know what was happening on 9/3/2022. And I thought that would be a pretty good reminder. Have a great rest of your weekend.